And we're on the air with Gary, have I got you on the line?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to hear from you. And
yes, I'm excited. I've been nervous all morning.
Well, I was up till 1 o'clock last night preparing for this, and then I realized on the way down here I left some of my notes sitting on my desk.
So that's what happens when you get old.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you're a little younger than I am, though, I believe. Are you?
I'm 73, so
yeah,
I don't
you're
know.
A little younger by a
okay.
year.
Gotcha.
Gary and I met at my son and daughter-in-law's vineyard. I don't know, what, 3 years ago, something like that.
Twice, I think, actually.
Yeah,
and
yeah, we have.
One was just before COVID, I think. It might have been a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
We sat. They have a beautiful, they have a beautiful vineyard. And
yeah.
We sat out there and talked. And
we talked for about 3 hours and drank a lot of wine.
Yes, we did. In fact, my wife and I yesterday went to, for a couple of reasons, one because I knew I was coming on the show, went to the Tara and Andrew's tasting room.
Ah, good.
It's open. Yeah, they've been able to open outside again.
Good. So, excellent.
So I sat with your son and your daughter-in-law, Andrew and Tara, for a couple hours.
Well, maybe they're listening right now. I hope they are. Spread the word. How to do it.
Yeah, I reminded them yesterday. They said they would be listening, so we'll see.
Well, I've read a ton of stories about you, and when you and I were sitting talking, we talked for 2 or 3 hours, and just enjoyed the discussion. That's why I asked you to come on. I didn't realize I was sitting with royalty at the time. Now I've read all these articles about you. I'm a little embarrassed. When we're going to come back next fall, maybe next spring, not this spring, and maybe we can sit down and I will be humble around you. You had quite a life back then. You still do.
yeah. Well, I don't run anymore. I quit running about a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But I walk every day and I ride a bike, either exercise or out on the road.
Now, was Andrew correct? I think he told me you had double hip replacement. Is that right?
Well, yes. One at a time. One about 5 years ago and one about 3 years ago. And
that would cut your back on running.
Yeah, you know, the hips are great. The new hips, I have absolutely no problem with them. Probably could do some running. But my hip doctor said, you know, hey, you know, you want to run on it, go ahead, but you may see me one more time before you die.
Yikes.
You know, he said, well, you can just run and ride and you know, walk and ride and you'll be fine.
Well, you were quite an active rider before the hip surgery, weren't you?
Well, yeah, you know, when I was 39, my running career was ending, of course, but I was looking forward to being the best Masters, which is 40 and older runner in the world, and on my 39th birthday, I ran 39 miles, in fact, to finish near Ohio, making a loop where your son and daughter are.
And that darn near killed you, didn't it?
Well, no. What happened was the next day I didn't treat the mileage like I should have, and I ended up running with a couple of one younger guy who was a good runner, and he was running hard that day, so I jumped in with him and we were running, and I tore a quad muscle in my left quad, so I couldn't run. So
a
I
long
jumped
time.
On a I jumped on a bike, and I found I could bike just fine plus it strengthened my quads. So I cycled for, you know, a couple hundred miles a week for about 3 years, and my claim to fame in cycling, they have a race out here on the West Coast. It's called it's a 2-day stage race. You know, they combine the 2 days' times.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-day stage race, and the first day is 75 miles from Death Valley to Lone Pine, which is some climbing, but not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second day is only 25 miles, but it's from Lone Pine, and you go up Whitney Road. This is a road race, not a not a mountain bike race. You go up Whitney Road to the portal, Mount Whitney portal, which is, I don't know, 7,000-8,000 feet. So anyway, claim to fame is I'm riding the 40 and over group with all these former riders who were all Cat 1, Cat 2 retirees. You know,
mm-hmm.
the big wheels in the, so to speak, in the cycling world, and I beat them all the second day so badly. I was fifth the first day, and I beat them all so badly the second day I won. So that was very, they did not like me. They did not like me.
I'm sure they did.
I don't blame them. If some cyclist jumped off a bike at the age of 40 and beat me in a running race back then, I would not have liked it.
So, were you humble?
I was humble. I was tired. If you've ever been up Mount Whitney, it's a long 25 miles.
I haven't been up it, thank you. Yeah. And I don't think I'll do it. Well, now, the thing that really got me going when I started reading articles was an article from way back in the 80s in the Los Angeles Times about following your current wife. She was not your wife at the time, Ruth, who, by the way, is a phenomenal runner herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you were following her out to the Boston Marathon and just decided you'd get in and came in second? Is that right?
Yeah.
Those people must have hated you.
Well, see, I ran for New Balance back then.
Yeah.
And New Balance factories in Boston. So, you know, Ruth was, my wife was going to run Boston. And I got back there a couple of days earlier. We went to the New Balance factory. And they were like, why aren't you running? You know, you were seventh a couple of years ago. And I go, well, I'm just out here, just having a good time.
Yeah.
But come on, you should run. Well, you know, if you run, we'll give you some money.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so I ran and ended up getting second to Jeff Smith from England. So New Balance gave me cash, and I won some cash. I like the, not like they give out nowadays for second, you know, in the 100,000 range. I think I won like 10,000 total. But the nice thing, too, was the sister race with the Boston Marathon is in Japan, and they send their best finishing Japanese runner to, what's it called, Ruth? Ome Hochi. And then we send the first finishing American to Boston. So I went to Ome, which was the second time I'd gotten to do that.
Fantastic.
And Ruth went with me. Funny thing is, you know, I'm the big star of that thinking over there, leading the USA team over, and I got like seventh, I think, in that race, fifth, since I got fifth.
Put you in your place.
Oh, I got seventh, and Ruth got fifth in the women's race, and they didn't even know she was there. Like,
was it? Is it true she got so she could beat you later in life and also beat you at Scrabble?
Oh, that'd be good. Oh, you know how to hurt. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She beats me at Scrabble all the time. I can't spell. That's a tough thing to beat Scrabble if you can't spell.
I hear you.
And, I can't see. When I started running again at about the age of 44, I found I could run again. I only ran 5Ks because it's the only distance I could beat her in because she was training. So she's 10 years younger, so
yeah.
She had 10 years on me.
And a lot better looking, yeah.
Yeah, a lot better looking. And she finally started beating me in 5Ks when I got to be about 60, and she was 50.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, how badly do I want to race anymore?
Well, I think I read somewhere you said the two things that you like the least is getting older and getting slower. How did you handle after you hit 39, how did you handle those two factors personally?
Well, I stayed motivated. In my age group, racing kept me motivated because I could still compete nationally in 50 and over when I was 50.
Yeah.
You know, you get to 55 and suddenly all the 50-year-olds are youngsters and you've slowed down. But, you know, when I got to 60, I could compete. So that kept me going. But basically, I found that I made a complete circuit. When I first started running, obviously I was in high school, and I was racing high schoolers in every race. Even in road races, high schoolers, trying to beat high schoolers. By the time I hit 55, I looked around me, and guess who I'm racing again?
High schoolers.
All the high schoolers. So I'm like, I've run all this time, and I've got back to where I started, racing high schoolers again.
I love it. Well, speaking of high schoolers, you coached with my son. You are quite active, and one of my joys in life, as you, I think you probably know, that I was an assistant athletic director at two different universities, and one of my joys in life is watching young people get smarter and better at their sport, but also get smarter with the books. How did you approach coaching the kids at the high school level?
Well, first of all, the backstory was basketball that I coached with your son, Andrew.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, he is, and I'm not just, I've coached with a lot of guys. He is really an outstanding coach.
He is.
One of the best basketball coaches I've ever worked
His mother
with.
And my hearts were broken when he decided to quit coaching.
Yeah. Well, he hired me, actually, to coach with him.
Uh-huh.
I did an interview, and maybe there weren't many people trying for the job, but he and I coached the combined JV and Frost Soft boys high school team at Villanova High School
mm-hmm.
in Ojai. And the second year, they gave me the track job as well. And so, you know, in the track season, I needed an assistant. I said, hey, man, Andrew, you want to coach with me? He goes, yeah, sure. I said, here's the problem. You're going to be the field event coach. He goes, I don't know anything about the discus.
No.
I'm like, here's a discus. Take it home.
He's honestly, about 150 pounds. He wasn't a thrower.
Well, I got news for you. That kid can do anything.
Yeah.
He took that discus home. He went online. He studied the discus.
Yeah.
We had our first practice. We had two good discus throwers in high school. By the time practice started, he could out-throw them.
Oh.
He could throw the discus further than our conference or league champion.
Amazing.
That's why I liked coaching basketball with him. I was at the point where I couldn't really show kids how to do things anymore. But Andrew was better than they were in basketball. This is like about 8 years ago, so he's a little slowed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he could school them.
Yeah.
You know, he is a great coach and a great athlete.
I was once listening to a radio broadcast of Andrew's basketball game. It was an away game, and we weren't at the game, and the announcer was, and it probably was not politically correct what he said, but Andrew dunked a ball.
Yep.
And the guy said, that's the only white kid I've ever seen dunk.
Especially his size.
Yeah.
Pretty talented guy. And the kids loved him. Kids still do, of course, but he doesn't coach anymore. I still coach. I moved over to the public school in town.
Uh-huh.
I coach girls JV basketball.
Good.
And I think the first question you asked right there, back there was, you know, how did I approach them?
Yeah.
Well, it's girls JV basketball, if you've ever seen it.
Sure. I have a granddaughter that's playing right now.
Okay, well, you know, girls basketball is a lot like soccer in that girls JV basketball, because the ball is always rolling around the floor.
Yeah.
And nobody ever scores.
Yeah, and there's lots of free balls. I mean, the ball flies everywhere. Yeah, yeah.
I've had referees show up and say, I'm not calling jump balls today. Why not? Because every play ends in a jump ball.
Yeah.
Just tell your girls to fight through it.
We'll yeah.
be here all night if I stop the game.
Well, I've noticed a lot of coaches that are coaching my granddaughter, about halfway through the first period, they put their whistle away and they quit calling fouls, too, because there's constant fouling going on.
Yeah, constant double dribble and step.
Yeah, that too, yeah. Well, anyway,
yeah.
Those of us who enjoy athletics, and I think athletics is, along with music, are two of the things that we don't give enough credit to for bringing our kids up. I as a father, appreciate you being a coach. And
yeah.
I'm glad you do it. And now, you also have another avocation that I had. I owned a sporting goods store for 5 years, and you owned a running store for 20-some years. You were successful. I like to think of myself as the Bizarro of Gary Tuttle. I don't know if you remember Bizarro on Superman, but
yeah.
I was kind of the ugly, broken mirror image of you.
I started off selling New Balance out of my car. Because
uh-huh.
nobody could get New Balance on the West Coast, and I was always going back to Boston to run in their race and going to meetings with them, and I'd always come back with a whole bunch of New Balance and Wits and sell them out of my car. And then one day, New Balance said, look, you got to have a store if you're going to sell a product. You can't be selling it out of your car. So I started my own running store, And I started with Dolphin running shorts. If you remember Dolphins, I don't know, the old timers remember them.
I don't remember Dolphins. Okay.
And then with the stripe stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
Stripe shorts.
Yeah.
And then New Balance. And so, yeah, I had my store 36 years, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it was very successful, and I loved it. But I had a young runner who wanted to buy it, and I was more than ready, just about, it's been 10 years now, I think.
Got to take a break.
I sold it to him, and then he sold it. It's still open, and my wife, Ruth, works there three times a week or so.
I've forgotten the name of it. What is the...
Inside Track,
yeah.
Yeah, we sat around, tried to decide the name. I had a partner in the beginning. We wanted to call it Mr. Blister, Inside Track, Achy Feet. Everything was negative, but the Inside Track worked well.
Yeah.
So it's been good. It's still called Inside Track, and it's still in Ventura, still the place to get shoes.
What were your greatest races that you think that you had? I know you said in the articles I've read, you don't really think of yourself as a marathoner. It was just a hair too long for you, right?
Yeah, I never ran a good one either. Yeah,
second in the Boston's not bad. Come on, Gary.
That's a good finish, but it wasn't that great. That's the race I get the most credit for, but interestingly enough, the two best races I ran was... the World Cross Country Championships are represented in the United States in Chepstow, Wales. And I got seventh overall. I was first American by quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then the next week we went to a race called Cinque Mellini in Italy, where you run through literally through houses in the front door.
You know, you really go right through the house. Oh.
Yeah, right through the mills. They're mills, but they have the owner's house next to them. You'd run right through. I remember running in the front door, and they had their dog in the kitchen table leashed, and they were all drinking coffee, watching the runners storm by them. So those two races, Cinque Mellini and the World Cross Country Championships, were my two best.
Now you
actually, I held three American records at one time.
Yeah,
they're all gone now. But and that was obviously a good day as well. I got all three of them on the same day because they were all. On the track at all, 20K, hour, and 10 mile. They were all very similar.
You ran those all on the same day? Is that what you said?
Pardon?
Did you say you ran those all on the same day?
Well, it's all the same race.
Oh, okay.
Because it's on the track.
I got you.
It's an hour run.
Yeah.
The gun goes off, and you run as far as you can for an hour. And everybody has a lap counter and a person that marks your last step, and then they figure out. I ran 12 miles, 811 yards in an hour.
Wow.
Which put me at 58 minute 20K. So I got the 20K American record, and I had 2 minutes left to run.
It would take me 3 days to do that.
But, you know, I ran that hour run, and I keep running it. I think I ran it 7 times. I never broke an hour.
Huh.
That's a joke.
Oh, I was trying to figure out what that meant.
It always gets the same response. I think it's a funny joke. You know?
It is if you think about it.
Everybody goes blank. Well, what happened? Why couldn't you break an hour? Because it's an hour run.
We stopped you. Yeah. Oh, me.
Anyway.
Now, let me just touch on your wife, Ruth.
Sure.
What were her best races that you went to?
Well, she actually, we have an Ohio connection there because Ruth was trying to qualify for Olympic trials for women marathon. And we decided one of the good early races about 8 months out to get a good standard time was the Columbus, Ohio Marathon.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We went back there. It was freezing.
Yes, of course.
And she almost died. But she made it. She finished, but she shivered for a half hour. And even in the hotel, just like, I thought I was going to lose her. So she didn't qualify that day. Then she went up to Portland for the Portland Marathon, and you had to run under 2:45 marathon for women to qualify for the trials. And she ran 2:44:30, which was really wonderful.
Yeah.
Then she ran the Olympic trials in Houston, the actual trials to make the team. Of course, only three people go, three women, so it's next to impossible to do. But she got 19th and ran 2:40:20, something like that. 2:40. Uh-huh. So, I mean, that's anything in the 240s for women is national caliber easily.
Yeah.
So she, that was her best race, the marathon. She's stubborn, and it takes somebody not very smart and stubborn. No, I'm just kidding. She's a much smarter than I am, but she is stubborn.
Well, that another thing that was interesting to me is that I had heard of your coach's name at Humboldt State, Coach Hunt, but you also ran for him in high school as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, he got me started running distance because here's what happened. I was playing JV baseball, and we were playing the varsity in a scrimmage game, and I actually got a line drive hit to right field. And as I'm charging to first base, the right fielder threw me out at first base before I got there. That's how slow I was. So Coach Hunt looked over at my dad and said, "Why isn't that kid out for cross country? You know, he's that slow, he must be a good distance run." So I went out for cross country and did really well. Didn't run track until my senior year, but quit playing baseball. But then I went up to Humboldt State, which is way up Northern California, beautiful school in the Redwoods, you know.
Very famous for their distance. Yeah.
So I went up there as a freshman. School records were worse than our high school records. But I called Coach Hunt at the end of the track season up there, and I said, "Hey, the track coach is quitting, and nobody knows it yet." And he goes, "Oh, God, I'd love to come up there. God, put in a good word for me." Well, of course, my word might have helped some, but he was a great coach, and that's what did it.
Yeah.
So he applied, and he got the job, and he came up. And from then on, Humboldt became a track. We called ourselves Little Oregon because, you know, University of Oregon was the mecca.
Yep. Yep.
And we were almost as good. We just didn't have as many. We had as good runners. We just had as many good runners. And so we became Little Oregon. And I have another Ohio connection.
Okay.
My junior and senior year at Humboldt in track in college, the national track and field small college championships, NC2A, were at Ashland.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I won the national steeplechase, NC2A, both my junior and senior year at Ashland. And Bill Scobie, one of the other great runners out of Humboldt, won the 3 mile that weekend. And my best friend and college roommate and high school buddy, Ben Single, who came up, got fourth in the 1500. So we almost would be 26 points between the three of us.
Jeez.
We'd have had a couple of other athletes, we'd have won the Nationals team title, but
that's
we didn't
cool.
have it. So now, that's my final Ohio connection.
Sure.
I know I had listened to you say that Mecca, West Coast was the Mecca.
Yeah, it was in the 70s and
80s. It was, definitely. But my connection, I was running track 1964, high school, sitting in the living room watching Tokyo Olympics on, you know, RCA black and white, or maybe it was color, I don't know. It was a small TV with my dad and Bob Shule. From Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I think he went to Miami, Ohio, or something.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He won the 5,000 meter in the Olympics in 64. And he was my hero, this Ohio kid at that time. And then he was in the Navy and stationed over here at Port Hueneme, Point Magoo. And our coach, Jim Hunt, got him and Max Truex to come over and run with us. So my hero, one of my heroes, was an Ohio runner.
Well, good.
I have some Ohio connection. So Ohio can take some solace in that they didn't get left behind in the distance world by any means.
Okay, that brings me back to another thing that you're good at, politics. And the reason why I said I'm the bizarro Gary Tuttle is because I ran also for politics, but Ohio is as red as they get right now, and California is fairly blue, and you ended up becoming the Ventura deputy mayor, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
What got you into politics?
Well, I couldn't run.
Yeah.
I was at 40s era where I couldn't run, and I thought, I didn't like the direction Ventura was heading, and that it was unbridled. I don't mind growth. I wasn't against growth of housing, but it was that generation thought they had to, if it was an empty spot, we had to put something on it. And I'm just like, no, let's leave it for the future. So in a way, I ran on an environmental platform, and Patagonia's headquarters are here in Ventura.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The main headquarters. And so they got behind the campaign as well. And we came in with four people were elected in the 7 council, and 3 of us were environmentalists that came in on the platform of environmentalism. And so the first 4 years were really good, and I was in the majority, and I really enjoyed it. Then my term came up, ended, and I thought, do I really want to do this again? In politics, no matter what you do or who you are, you make enemies.
Yeah.
And everybody's quick to tell you that you're lousy, nobody likes you, you'll never get reelected. I think I ran the second time, not because I enjoyed it so much. I just wanted to see, see if they were right. Did everybody hate me? Well, it turns out I got as many votes the second time, and so I ran for reelection. But as they say, be careful what you wish for, because I remember that first day sitting back in city council chambers and going, oh, man, do I really want to do this for 4 years again? But I did get to be deputy mayor, and it was enough after 2 terms. I said, okay, I'm done.
I had plenty. I've run twice. At one time for a small local position, but the second time was for state representative. And after the year of going around knocking on doors, shaking hands and stuff like that, I was done then. I did, it didn't really hurt my feelings that I didn't win. I was tired.
Yeah,
it's hard work. People don't know that.
I did enjoy being a council member. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy campaigning.
Yeah,
and I still don't. I do a lot for local Democrats and stuff. I was on the state committee a couple of times, or went to state convention. I went on a committee. I do everything I can, but, it's like, hey, go knock on doors. I go, nope, not knocking on doors. I hate that.
Yeah. I don't mind the knocking on doors. It's the walking from one house to the next one that bothers me. But you would have done that fine.
Yeah.
I've got another question I got to ask you, because I did a similar thing. One of the quotes I've got from you says, I've always looked to have fun, and I've done fun things, and I don't think I've ever hit my potential because of that. Well, one of the fun things that you talk about in the article I think it was the New York, Los Angeles Times, you said that you actually drank some beer along the route of the Boston. Now, did you really do that?
Yes. Okay. I went back to Boston with a good buddy who wanted a guy named Danny. And he wanted to break 3 hours in the marathon, and so I said, I'll pace you. Why not?
Sure.
It's just a good long slow run. So and it was a hot day. So if you've ever run Boston, which you probably haven't,
no,
if you've
I
ever run Boston, there's a lot of free beer along the way being offered. But
hey, really,
have beer, have a beer. So I'm like, okay. So I drank numerous beers running alongside of him, and we got to the finish line. He broke 3 hours.
Good.
On 250, something like that. Anyway, broke 3 hours, and we get in the shoot, and he says to me, are you okay? You're staggering. I go, I'm fine. I'm just drunk. And he looks at me like, what? So that's, and the other drinking story, which I probably shouldn't be proud of, but
that's all right.
There's a race it's over now, but it used to be in town for about 25 years called the Pub Crawl.
The what?
And it was Pub, P-U-B.
Oh, yeah,
Pub
sure.
Crawl,
yeah.
C-R-A-W.
We had one of those
Pub
at OU.
Crawl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, we started, it was 4 miles, you'd start, the gun go off, you'd have to drink a beer, put it in the barrel upside down so you didn't cheat, and then you run to the next pub, bar, whatever, and so it's 6 beers, well, it's 5 beers, 4 miles, and then you have to finish the beer at the finish, so you get to the finish, you still got to drink a beer.
Yeah.
So it's 4 miles, 6 beers, and I won the race almost every time I ran until I got old, and I'd run right around 21 minutes for 4 miles and 6 beers. Now, most people can't drink 6 beers in 21 minutes.
Let alone
run 4 miles in 21 minutes. And I was able to do them both. I always said that that was my Olympic event, but unfortunately, never had it.
I don't think there's any way I could drink six beers in 21 minutes. that's a feat. Now, I'll tell you my little story. We had the screen door open down at Ohio University, and I didn't want to run it. It was a 5K. But my boss, Harold McElhaney, who was the athletic director at the time, said, "Hey, why don't you run with me?" I said, "I don't want to. I really don't want to do that." He said, "I'll buy you a beer on the way." How are we going to do that? So I agreed to go with him. We take off. And sure enough, there was a drive-through, and he ran through and got two beers, and we drank on the way. So I guess it works. My wife was not happy.
No. At our local pub crawl, I don't know if you've ever seen The Office, the TV show The Office, and they
yes.
had that one segment on the 5K race.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I missed that.
And Oscar and somebody, they take a taxi to the finish line.
Oh.
They take a taxi to the bar and then take a taxi to the finish line, get out like 100 yards.
Yeah.
Well, guys would do that in the pub crawl. They drink a beer, jump in a taxi, and the taxi drive them to the next one, and then they drink a beer.
That's cheating.
What
was that lady that did that in the Boston?
Rosie Roulette.
Yeah.
I was actually at the finish line. I'm not sure why I was there. I didn't run that year. I always win every year. New Balance brought me back. So I was at the finish line about 200 yards down from the finish before they finish, and the runners are coming through, and Rosie comes through, first female, and first female. And I'm like, no,
can't be.
This is not your winner. And everybody's looking at me like, oh, you're such a hater. I go, no, this woman, look at her. She did not do that.
No sweat.
And it turns out I was right.
Yeah.
She cheated. Rosie cheated.
Did Ruth run that Boston?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember why. I know I didn't run because I know I was at the finish, but.
Well,
no, she didn't run that one. I think Ruth only ran it a couple of times.
Okay. You ran it three times?
No, I probably ran it about seven or eight times.
Oh, okay.
I got a second and a seventh. And actually, one year I got like 43rd or something. I ran really fast.
Huh.
It was just a ton of good runners that year. And the weather was perfect.
What are the names that we might know of the best runners, West Coast runner, distance runners that you ran against when you were young?
Well, of course, Steve Scott.
Yeah.
He could run anything from a mile to a 10,000. Ralph Cerna, which was his teammate. University of Irvine had a whole bunch of really good runners.
Uh-huh.
San Diego State had Tom Hunt. And probably names you that really heard of, but because there was so many of us doing so many things, it was easy to get lost in the results, so to speak. You know, you get eighth in a race that's as good as any place in the world. It doesn't mean much. Ruth said to me when she first met me, she said, "Don't you want to win?" I go, "No, you want me to win, I'll stay home and race in Ventura."
You were having fun.
The better you get, the less you win.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
What do you think of, you know, I guess the year that you finished second behind, why am I forgetting? Yes. It's been, that year was the last year that they didn't pay really big money to win the.
Yep.
What do you think that's done to distance running? Has it done anything? Has it made it better or worse?
Well, yeah, I think it's made the times faster
for
a couple of reasons, because people make a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a life, especially if you're African, they come over here and just clean up. So I think it's done a couple of things. It's opened up the minority
mm-hmm.
African runners to a lot of money, and I think it opened the door to cheating a lot. Well.
Has it? Well, especially
not
Kenya.
Not cheating on the course and cutting courses or anything. I don't get away with that. But just, you know, taking stimulants and drugs. And,
yeah. Is that really big still now, do you think?
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
Finding more and more of the Kenyans cheated, which isn't, you know, I think the early ones, like the Washington State group and Nyambui and Rono, all that early 70s, late 70s guys, I don't think they were cheating. But, they were running world-class times, but even they weren't would get clobbered nowadays.
Why do you think so many, I mean, I got a story. I'll tell you the story real quickly. My eldest son ran 800 for OU, he was very fast for a Mid-American Conference runner. He was sub 155 for the 800, right. Wasn't bad. But the one race I remember, Eastern Michigan had two Kenyan kids, and Christopher was tied with them after the first lap, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's going to really do well. That was the last he saw of them.
Yeah.
They flew by him. I think they both beat him by over 5 seconds. So I think they were sub 150s that day. What makes those Kenyans, other than drugs, do you think it's their culture, or why are they so fast, especially at distance?
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to disparage all of them.
No, of course not.
Some good Kenyan and African runners and American runners that dope, and there are some that don't.
Yeah.
What makes them better? I think they have a lot of motivation financially, and you know, that has a lot to do with it. And a lot of them live at high altitude.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, huge for a runner. If you're born at high altitude, you get a tremendous advantage already, especially if you can train there. Mm-hmm. And, I think they also have good coaching. If I knew the answer to that, really, I'm just kind of guessing.
You'd be in charge.
Be a great coach. I'm just guessing.
Now, talking about running at altitude, I read an article that said you had one of the highest VO2 numbers.
VO2 max, it's called.
Can you tell me what that is all about?
I mean, I'll take it back a little bit. The man that invented aerobics, Dr. Cooper, mm-hmm. wrote the books and everything. He brought in a group of world-class runners that I got to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And he tested us for a week. We stayed there. I think it was in Dallas. We stayed a week in Dallas, and they put us through. Prefontaine was there, Frank Shorter, Don Cardone. Put us through a week of testing. One of the tests was VO2 max, where you get on a treadmill and you run to exhaustion, and they've got you hooked up to a breathing apparatus that collects the oxygen. And they know what percentage of oxygen is in the air and how much you're expelling, therefore how much did you use. And so it was VO2 max. And I was like 84,
I think it said in the article.
Yeah.
84
set. And Prefontaine was about 86%. Mm-hmm. And since then, I think they've had a couple of Kenyans that outperformed us. But for a long time, I was compared to Prefontaine and VO2 max. Mm-hmm. But the other, so one of the things they did, they took a muscle biopsy as well out of our calf and tested us for slow twitch, fast twitch. And I was like 98% slow twitch, which takes us back to that baseball story where I get
yeah.
for space. So I asked Dr. Cooper, I said, okay, I should be a slug. Why can I beat these guys at a 2 mile, for instance, who have, better fast twitch than I do? And he said, well, through your training, you have developed the enzymes that work effectively aerobically.
Huh.
Anaerobically, which is your fast twitch muscles. So the bottom line was I had very few of them, but they were super efficient.
Yeah.
So that's what you get from training fast. You get the enzymes which make your fast twitch quicker. So I was slow twitch. The other interesting thing, they dunked us in a tank of water. Mm-hmm. You blow all the air out, you're underwater, and they weigh you on dry land and in a tank of water, and they take measurements of your muscle mass, and I was 1.8% body fat.
Wow.
And there was, I created, this is probably my biggest claim to fame that year. I was 1.8% body fat. The magazine Runner's World was really huge at the time. Runner's World came out with an article, Gary Tella can't be, he'd be dead. You need, 3% body fat to sustain life or something.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not dead, which is why, though, I think I couldn't run a good marathon, because you have to have some excess body fat
and
fuel. A marathon to burn as fuel.
Yeah.
And when I got done with whatever I was burning, you know, I was done. I was starting to eat my muscles.
Yeah.
And going into ketosis, which is, again, eating. So
I had a bad.
Anyway, I was 1.8% body fat, which
wow.
means I should have been. Dead.
I had a basketball player, Terry Cummings, played for us when I was at DePaul University, and Terry had a 3-point body fat, and there were doctors that would come look at him because nobody had ever heard of that low. I can't imagine at 1.8 or 9, whatever you were.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of...
Well, I could always tell when I was ready to run well, because I'd be in the 133 range. Not from starving, but just from working out. I could only hold that level for, you know, for 2-3 weeks before I'd start seeing negative results. So I'd have to get back up to 136 or so. But when Olympic trials day or whatever, I was always trying to be 133, 134 for the 10,000, which I could run. I could, you know, I was the alternate to the Olympic team in 76 in the 10,000. But it's a one-day thing, and, you know, I remember coming off the turn, and I had two guys in front of me. Well, it's a long story, but I needed to beat both those two guys to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
There were other guys ahead of me, Rogers and Shorter, but they'd already said, even if we make the 10,000-meter team, we're not running an Olympic 10,000. We're both just going to concentrate on the marathon. So if you're fifth, you're in the team.
Wow.
Two of us are headed. So anyway, I'm running for fifth place. And I'm coming around the turn, and got two guys right in front of me, and I had nowhere to lean. I had to lean right into the middle of them, and of course I ended up seventh, and top five went. So
that's a shame.
So that was a good 10,000-meter run.
Well, you might. I don't know if Andrew's ever told you this, but his grandmother ran in the Olympic time trials back in 36, maybe 34. I'm not sure which one, but so he got his speed from her, not from me.
Well, they didn't have women's distance back then.
No.
So I know that she had to have been a sprinter or a field event runner.
She was a sprinter, and she didn't finish very well. So, but to make it was something. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Now, we're down to about 4 minutes.
Okay.
Got any little
tales? I'll go run a mile.
Yeah, there you go. Did you ever break a 4-minute mile?
No, you know, that's one of my, if I had to do things over again, I would have taken a year to train for the mile.
Is that right?
Through that whole area. Just to say, because nobody thinks you could run unless you could break. You didn't break 4 minutes? Oh, well, you're nobody.
I had a kid in high school that I ran with, Earl Deal, and he got a 4-minute mile, 4.3 or something like that mile in high school.
I ran 4 minutes, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So I could run fast, but I ran a 2:59. 2 minute 59 second three lapper, which is, just under 4 minute pace with a lap to go. But I could have done it had I trained for it, but, you know, just at the time didn't seem important. Now I wish I had.
You sound like, you're quite I don't know what the word is, but you sound like you want to have fun, and you wouldn't be one of those guys that goes out there and knocks your head off to right. train, but... Yeah, you trained all the time.
Yeah, I ran about 110 miles a week.
You must have liked it, right? Enjoyed
it. I twice a day, 6 days a week. Sunday was always once only, but it'd be long hilly run, whatever. So I figured I'd run about 180,000 miles in my life.
Wow.
And really never had any problems. Yeah, I got two new hips now, but they didn't bother me till, you know, the very end when I was through running anyway, so I didn't care.
Yeah, that could happen to me at any moment. So.
Yeah. My knees are fine, my ankles are fine, my feet are fine, just my back a little bit when I try to do too much.
But. And your Scrabble game sucks.
I play the best.
Well, I think she admitted that it was like 60 to 40 or something like
that
last time it was advertised that you'd...
We're really good as a team,
a
couple, because she can spell and I can cipher or whatever,
well,
I don't know.
Do you ever get involved in Andrew's trivia games that they have? Thought you did, yeah. And you're, I think you're pretty good at that, you and...
I was listening to you earlier, and you said we're good friends, and you said, well, we're great friends. Well, maybe not great. Well, we are great friends. In fact, we've gone to Hawaii with them. We've gone... We're going... It looks like we're going to go to Gaviota in 3 weeks now that we've all...
Fantastic.
All this Porterra, we all have our shots.
Yeah,
cool. Andrew got his yesterday. Ruth got hers yesterday. Well, their first one.
My wife is getting hers today.
I get my second shot tomorrow.
Fantastic. Well,
yeah. Feel like I get my life back. I have done nothing. We have gone nowhere. Fortunately, we have a beautiful yard and a lot of room, and Ruth runs every day, and I ride the bike. But other than that, we don't go anywhere.
Well,
already.
That's been our life as well. Hey, we're down to the last few seconds, so I got to say goodbye to you, but I'm going to see you in either the fall or next spring, and I expect that we will sit out and drink some wine at the vineyard.
Well, I know a good place to go.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Gary Tuttle, one of the greats. Thanks for being on.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. What a great interview. Thanks to Gary. We're going to get out of here. Have a great day. We'll talk to you in about 15 minutes. Bye-bye.
Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk from broadcasting.